Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta stop leaving slices of bologna on the front door. It's bringing everything in here. Good evening. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Oldy Timey Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with.
You know, I have all the dogs in the neighborhood that want to lick my hands. If I would wash my hands, maybe they wouldn't do that. Dave Binkley from Weird in This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're along with.
And blah blah to you all. It is I, Gar the Ghoul, I think. Okay. There we go.
You dirty dog.
I know. If only our did I miss something? Is this the dog program? I thought it was the bell program.
It is the bell.
It is
but,
the bell.
But Pavlov's
well,
dog.
He can hang a bell on
a
dog.
Pavlov's dog.
Yes, we do.
Oh, yeah. Do you have that drooling problem? I do, but that's age. I don't know.
All right.
I do it at the dinner table. I do it at the dinner table and at Micro Center. Those two places is where I drool a lot.
Only up for ice cream for me.
I can do that if I go to Lowe's. We're like, hey, look over there. Oh, yeah, you know.
Lumber.
Lumber. Oh, my head.
Wow.
We're having fun already.
Yeah, well, we lumbered in here to bring you some great radio tonight. Stories
that was
I am the Segway King, yes. Stories that should ring a bell.
Oh my gosh!
One story. We're gonna have a contest on the one story, right, Gar?
Ring a bell?
Here we go.
Does that ring a bell? Maybe this rings a bell. There we go. There we go. Okay.
We're gonna have a contest on one of the episodes when we get to it. We'll explain it because Gar will agree when we get to it.
Okay.
For the contest.
Sure. We're having a contest.
Oh, Dave, that took me a while to get there. Blah, blah. Okay, yeah, you got me. All right, yeah.
News to me.
It will be a contest. It will be.
No, I had to call Dave. I had to call Dave this week and go, oh, my head. Oh, it hurts to be funny.
I sense deviltry afoot. Yes, I do.
Oh. It should have been a conference call. I agree and I apologize, but you never answer your phone. He's constantly looking at that caller ID going, who is calling? Who is calling me?
I don't have caller ID any longer.
So I don't know. He's just looking at a rotary dial phone going, I wonder who that is. I'm not going to answer. I wonder who that is. I don't know.
What is this rotary thing? I just pick up the thing that looks like a duck and talk into it. That's all. let us not bore our listeners with the backstage stuff and let them know that we're playing that weird circle.
I can't even see the listeners.
Murder at Midnight.
Crap. Oh,
do
yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, sure. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Hold on, radio.
All right.
I'm the medicated one.
Slow down on the coffee.
I'm the medicated one. Yeah.
It's evident.
Well, I do have coffee.
I didn't think anybody could tell. You shouldn't have said because I don't think anybody could
yeah,
tell.
We would have never known.
Wait. Where is it? It's about bells. What is a whole bunch of different kind of bells? Guess what kind this one is? You know, I mean, hey, there you go.
The dinner bell.
Okay. If your name is Rosie the Cow, sure.
Try a different one. Try a different one.
I think I intend to put a sandwich.
That's a dinner bell.
I've got a triangle around here, too.
They're all dinner bells.
Is a triangle a bell?
If it calls me to dinner, it is.
Because it's not a bell. But it makes a
it's
sound.
Dinner time. It's dinner
it's
time.
Dinner time. Yeah, we're calling Dave to dinner. I have a triangle on the set. That's why it's the so available. How you doing, Dale? I love radio. Dale quit. I can't.
A whole lot of radio.
Whole lot of radio. Oh. Why am I stumped?
Yeah.
Okay.
Your turn, Dale. Your turn, Dale.
Your turn, Dale. What
that's fine.
In the
whenever,
heck?
Just go ahead.
Hmm?
It's going great.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, Dave, I was going to the bank this week, and no, I got nothing. Weird circle. Number six.
Okay.
Oh, that's the one.
A whole lot of radio.
Yeah.
A whole lot of radio. I need to tune in. Where is everybody?
Well, you can't hear us because your microphone's on mute, so you can't hear us.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Oh, there's Fog Spain and good old Bob.
Ooh. Yes. He came for the Liberty Bell.
Yeah, I wish I had a good one for that. I've got a bell that looked like a Liberty Bell, but it sounds horrible.
Well, so does the Liberty Bell. It's got a big crack in it.
So does the one I've got. But it sounds like, I don't know. Oh, what is that?
Okay, your turn, wait. Dale.
Okay, Dale.
Sorry, I went to go get a sandwich. Let's start with the weird circle. A terribly
ooh,
strange bed.
That's right. Now,
yes. Now
you pick the one that is the contest.
Yes,
the
you
contest
did.
Is to find the bell in this show. Right,
yes,
Carr? Yes.
Mm-hmm, that's it.
That's the contest.
That's it.
Yep.
Yep. Brr.
Yep.
Brr. Yep. That's the contest.
That's the contest.
All righty then. Let's start with part one. Originally broadcast.
July 8th, 1943.
Episode
sure.
Number six.
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, a terribly strange bed.
Jack Westcott was the best friend I ever had. He was the gayest of people. That was until we left America. I was writing a book about historic murder cases and had come to Paris to do some research work. Jack was fascinated with my work. Strangely fascinated. Almost horribly so. He enjoyed finding twisted minds and probing them. His hunger for crime was bound to end in tragedy. On the last evening of our visit in Paris, we were walking on the left bank of the Seine River when Jack noticed a crowd gathered about our old friend, the head of the Paris police force, Inspector Duval. I was in a hurry to return to the hotel to finish writing my murder manuscript. The deadline was in the morning. But Jack insisted.
What's the excitement all about, Duval?
Well, hello, Mr. Westcott. Still looking for ancient murders, Mr. Manning?
Not tonight, Duval. Ancient or otherwise.
Stick around, Mr. Manning. I'll show you a murder the likes of which you've never seen before. Okay, boys, drag it out of the river.
What is it, Inspector?
A corpse, Mr. Westcott. A corpse that's been squashed thin as a piece of paper.
Well, let's see it.
Oh, what do you mean, thin as a piece of paper?
Bring it over here, boys. Right under the gaslight.
horrible-looking thing, isn't it?
Horrible and fascinating. Well, it looks like it got squeezed in a giant press.
We've had an epidemic of these corpses lately.
Any idea who's doing it?
Not even a vague notion, Mr. Man. Hey, you! You, the fat man!
You mean me, Inspector?
Yes, I mean you, fat man. How come you're always around when we pull a corpse out of the river?
Why? I enjoy murder. You enjoy it? You enjoy murder? It appeals to my sense of the artistic.
Oh, it does.
Well, there's something fascinating about these bodies. Something for a connoisseur alone to appreciate. The symmetry of the remains. The beautifully flawless flatness of the corpse. The hollow in the stomach. Lying in this puddle of gaslight, this mass of flesh and bones, makes a nice picture. I should enjoy painting this, if I could paint.
I know what you mean, Fat Man, but wouldn't you prefer probing the mind of a man who conceived this crime?
A man's mind is his secret self. Well, enjoy the ghastly spectacle, my friend. Enjoy it. Good evening, gentlemen.
All right, men. Take the body down to the morgue and try and find out who it is.
Come on, Burke. I'd like to follow that fat man.
In heaven's name, why? He's nothing but a psychopathic case.
I want to satisfy a hunch.
Well, if you're such a good detective, why don't you join Scotland Yard?
Well, I might, Burke. I might at that. Where the devil has that gross piece of flesh disappeared to now? He was right in front of us until we turned this corner.
Well, we've lost him, Jack. And I don't wonder. We've passed through every side street in the whole city. If you ask me, he knows he was being followed.
Good. If he knows, he'll show his hand sooner. Now, the only place he could have gone around here is into the back door of this house. I wonder what house this is.
It's a gloomy dump. Let's go back to the hotel, Jack. I've got to finish that manuscript tonight.
Looks like a public bar to me. The La Belle Tavern. Are you coming with me, Burke, or are you going home?
I'm with you, old boy. I brought you to Paris, and by heaven, I'm going to return you to America.
Now, this must be the doorbell. Here goes. And, Burke, no matter what I do tonight, don't worry.
Come in, gentlemen. Come in.
Perfectly right, Fat Man. Those two Americans did follow you. They're sitting at the bar inside.
The Americans value their lives so slightly. Amazing, isn't it, Cecilia?
Their lives. Our lives. They might be cops. I don't want to get my neck in a noose.
To be quite candid, I am not interested in your neck. You're so impatient, and impatience is an evil ascribed to the very young. It might be a pity if you are not allowed time to cure yourself of that evil.
Don't threaten me, you fat pig. You pig.
I'd hope to slap some sense into that lovely but empty head. Obviously, my stupid pigeon, those two Americans are wealthy. They would enjoy our roulette table if you would show them to it. Remember, I'll talk to the croupier, and he will take care of the wheel of fate. If you don't do your part well, you face a lifetime in jail.
What happens if they get wise? Room 16?
But of course.
Let me go.
I knew you'd understand.
Yeah. I understand. There's something so gay about Americans, I always say. I hope you boys don't mind if I stick around.
Well, miss, I...
Not at all, miss, not at all.
You can call me Cecilia. How about another drink?
Fine.
Three more of the same, bartender.
What do you do for a living, Cecilia?
Oh, I model. In a dress shop.
I don't believe you, Cecilia.
Jack, stop ribbing the girl. She's a good kid.
Well, I'm on the level. I'm interested in it.
Here's the drinks.
Thanks.
Why do I interest you?
Well, because you're fairly easy to figure out.
Am I? Why?
You really want me to tell you?
Sure I do. Well, here's mud in your eye.
Touché, touché.
Oh.
Potent stuff, Jack. Potent stuff tastes like cyanide.
Well, Cecilia, I'd say you're a poor girl who lives in the slums. But you're pretty. Prettier than anybody in your entire neighborhood. Well, let's see. Then you must have met a man.
What of it? I'm no saint.
He promised you a lot of doodads, and suddenly you found you'd committed your first crime. Let's say, murder.
What'd she do? Set her mother on fire?
Oh, well, for that, let's have three more drinks. Bartender, three more. Well, now, let's say it really was murder. The second murder wasn't so hard. And the third was easy, wasn't it?
I never had nothing to do with a murder.
Well, for the sake of argument, let's say you have. But inside of you, all the time, is this wanting to be liked, wanting to be on the level. But your so-called friends, they don't trust you, Cecilia. Someday they'll double-cross you.
I hear the drinks.
Thank you.
Nobody will ever double-cross me. Well, here's mud in your eye. Drink up, boy.
Is there anything else to do around here?
You seen the gambling rooms?
Gambling rooms? Ah, that's me. Who runs those gambling rooms, Cecilia?
I don't know.
One of your friends? A fat man, perhaps, with a long nose?
I don't know the owner. Gosh, you're real nice.
Is the fat man in the back room now?
Probably. Gambles here a lot. Do you replay?
Sure. Well, come on, Jack. We'll see who's right. My books or your instincts.
Number 21 wins.
Jack, the fat man's in the corner of the room.
Yeah, I saw him, Burke.
And he saw you, old boy. Don't think he didn't.
Come on, boys. Let's play.
Money, money, money. Place your bets, gentlemen.
They'll make some room for us over here. Come on.
Hello, Cecilia.
Hello, Monty Laureat. You playing again? I thought you lost every cent you owned last night.
A desperate man finds desperate ways to raise money.
Even murder, eh? You heard about it.
Perhaps. And perhaps not.
I'd like you to meet some new friends of mine, Monty. This is Jack Westcott and Burke Manning. Monty Laureat.
How do you do?
Money, 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 gentlemen. Place your bets.
I bet 30 francs on odd.
I'll bet 100 francs on number 13.
Good boy, Jack.
The play is dead. Round and round the little ball goes. Where she stops, nobody knows.
Hey, Burke, I feel a little dizzy. You had too much to drink, pal, and those drinks were strong.
Number 13 wins.
What? I won!
Good for you, American. Lucky for you. I won the first time I ever played here, but never again.
Money, 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 money.
That was the first time Jack won in that incredible evening. But as the ball spun, his winnings increased. The table seemed to have gone crazy. Jack became gambling drunk. The croupier seemed desperate as that wheel spun round and round, each time increasing Jack's winnings. The room was tense with excitement, and even the little thin loser, Laureat, seemed surprised.
Monsieur Westcott, your luck is phenomenal. You've won 30 times. 30 times.
Jack, you've won a fortune, man. Stop now before it's too late.
Leave him alone, Burke. Let him play if he wants to.
Sure, let me play if I want to. I want to break the bank.
Careful, monsieur. Let me warn you. Careful.
Jack, it's almost midnight, and I've got a lot of work to do tonight. Please, let's go. And remember the fat man.
The fat man be hanged.
Here, Jack. Have another drink.
Thanks, is it?
Jack, be sensible.
Ah, stop being an old auntie, Burke. I'll see you later at the hotel. Make the book have a bloody ending. I'm in the mood for a good murder tonight.
Remember, Jack, I warned you. Goodbye.
Money, 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 gentlemen. Place your bets.
I told the croupier you wanted to see him back here, fat man, but it wasn't the croupier's fault the American broke the bank.
That is for me to decide. Where is the American now?
Outside. Buying drinks for the house.
Good, good. That ought to keep him busy.
You called for me, monsieur?
Yes, yes, I did. I'll need you too, Cecilia. Shut the door. I don't like to frighten our patrons.
I'm sorry about the wheel, monsieur, but it was broken and I couldn't control it.
That is unfortunate for you.
What are you going to do, monsieur?
Come here.
Don't put your fat hands on me, fat man. Let me...
Don't fight the fat man. You can't move, can you, croupier? Because if you move, my arm will break your neck. Call my men, Cecilia. I might need a little aid with this stupid fool.
What are you going to do, fat man?
Have his brains pressed out of his body in room 16. His mind is no good where it is now.
Oh, no, monsieur. Please, monsieur. Not room 16.
Yeah, I kind of can't wait for room 16.
Never mind.
They have used the word croupier at least 8 times.
Yes.
Sometimes
and for
those who don't know, croupier
starts to come out of your mouth. Yeah.
What? And for those who didn't know, the croupier is a person in charge of a gaming table gathering in and paying out money or tokens.
I did not know that.
Truth.
I did not.
Yeah, well, I didn't either. But they kept saying the word, and I was like, what the heck's a croupier?
an educational feature here on Erie House Radio.
There you go.
Every day is an education.
It is.
Well, sure, if you want to learn stuff.
Yeah, well, every once in a while.
And if you're not careful, you learn something. Yeah, that one.
But I'm always very careful with that, though, so I don't.
Oh, my. I can't. I cannot think.
I decided I know enough. I don't want to learn anymore. Does the brain ever do that? Does the brain ever do that? I'm full. Thank you. I'm full.
I think mine's in the process of reset, where you forget all the things you knew and you have to learn them all over again. It's fun.
Every day's an adventure.
All the things I got to relearn everything I knew. That would be, well, it's kind of like in I'm not an Adam Sandler fan, but I did enjoy the first 50 dates. That was, I guess it was a very
Moore
film. Yeah.
Yeah, she was adorable in that.
Yes, because she woke up every morning and she never knew what happened the day before. When Dana Carvey did one, something like that as well.
I've been on dates like that.
Yeah, I remember a couple of those. But Dana Carvey did a movie, something like that too, where he was a detective, so he had to leave himself notes every day so he could try and figure out and pick up where he left off the next day. So, very, very underrated actor comedian Dana Carvey. I think
I would have liked to have seen Columbo do that.
instead of just having you know, just one more thing, you know.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have one more thing if he took notes.
He always looked confused.
Could it be Satan? That Dana Carvey?
Yeah, that Dana Carvey.
Yeah. Isn't that special? That guy. Could it be Satan? It could be Satan.
Let's wrap up. We're in circle. A terribly strange bed and see what's going on in room 16.
Isn't that special?
What's that? What was that, Monsieur Laurier?
We'll probably be lucky if we don't ask questions.
I want another drink.
Jack, listen to me. Put on your hat and coat and leave this place. You're being watched all the time.
Who's watching me?
Hello, Jack.
Oh, have a drink.
No, Jack. You've had enough to drink. Leave this place right away.
She's right, Jack. You must leave. I'll see you home personally. Come on, then.
Oh, I know you don't, Monty Laurier. I know your tricks. The last man you saw home was found with a dagger in his breast.
How come you're so interested in me, Cecilia?
Because you're the first person who ever treated me decent. Oh, please go home.
Well, sooner or later, every woman develops some mother complex over me. Now, I don't want to be mothered.
Who is trying to mother you, my friend?
Oh,
Hello, fat man. Cecilius.
Ah, she's developed a rather latent maternal instinct. I think a maternal instinct is out of place tonight. After all, tonight's a night for celebration.
Yeah, the fat man's right. Celebration. Bartender, open a bottle of champagne.
Bartender, champagne. Champagne for Monsieur Westcott.
Won't you join us, Cecilia?
Yeah. Of course I will.
Here is the champagne, Monsieur.
Won't you drink with us, Monsieur Lariat?
No, thank you, fat man. I don't think so. I never enjoyed toasting to death.
Death? Open the bottle, bartender.
Good night, Jack, and good luck.
Good night. Good night, good night, good night, good night, good night.
Here's the handkerchief, fat man.
Oh, Jack, your money is all tied safely in your handkerchief.
Thank you, friend. Thank you, Sacco. Where'll I put the handkerchief?
It would be wisest to tie it to your belt.
I feel dizzy, fat man.
Oh, you need a cup of good hot coffee. That will straighten you right out. Cecilia, go in the kitchen and fix our friend a cup of coffee.
But I really...
Don't tell me, my little pigeon, that your hearing is failing you.
I'll get it right away.
I'm glad we're alone, fat man. I want a chance to talk to you.
Talk away, Jack.
Tell me confidentially. Why do you enjoy seeing a mutilated body dragged out of the river?
There's beauty in death.
In the act of death, or in the recovery of a body after life is left it?
In both.
Then do you enjoy committing a crime?
Perhaps. Perhaps it would be pleasant to watch a man die. Slowly. Very slowly. In order to see life leave the body. Say that you and I watched a murder by pressure. What would happen?
I'm interested, fat man. What would happen?
The face is the first part affected. It would turn red, and the victim would probably feel hot blood pounding in his brain, pounding like steel hammers.
Mm-hmm.
Then his eyes would feel sore, as if the fluid creating sight were ebbing slowly away.
That would be painful.
Painful but glorious. His face would discolor. The pressure on his chest would be so great he'd try to scream, cry out, but he couldn't. He wouldn't be able to move, not a limb, not a muscle. He'd be paralyzed. I'd see to that. And in that moment, all the horror that is in man's mind would be indelibly imprinted on the brain until a sudden crushing noise would blot out thought.
And what would that crushing noise be?
The pulverizing of the human bone.
Here's the coffee, fat man.
Ah, let me see it. Tastes all right. Here you are, Jack. This will fix you.
No, I don't think I want any. If you'll pardon me, I'm so dizzy. So frightfully dizzy.
Oh, of course you are. Here, Jack, drink it. Drink it, my friend, my good, good friend.
If you don't want to drink it, that Jack, don't.
Open your mouth, my friend. It will sober you very quickly.
No, I...
Open your mouth. There. Now, how do you feel?
I'm sick. It's dope, isn't it? It's dope.
Our friend Jack is asleep, Cecilia. Call the bartender. I think our friend will spend the night with us in room 16.
Looking all over Paris for you, monsieur.
You've been looking for me?
Yes, I've called every hotel in the city trying to find you. I know you don't remember me, but I met you earlier this evening at the La Belle Tavern. My name's Lauriard of the Paris Police Force.
Yes, of course. Won't you come in? Where's Monsieur Westcott?
I had to leave him at the tavern. He wouldn't listen to me. You see, monsieur, I've been assigned to watch that tavern. It's been under suspicion for several weeks.
Well, great Scott, man, where's Jack now?
At the tavern. He's carrying an enormous amount of money on his person. I know the fat man will never allow him to leave with that money.
Why don't you raid the den?
Unfortunately, we can't. We have no proof. As a matter of fact, they might not harm at all. But just in case, I thought it might be a wise idea for you to go down there. You can go to the door and ask for...
Yes? What do you want?
You're the bartender, aren't you?
I am not Napoleon's grandma. What do you want?
My friend Jack Westcott hasn't come back to the hotel as yet. We've been waiting for him, and I thought that he probably decided to spend the night here at your place, and
your
I...
Your friend is not here. Go home, American, before you get yourself in more trouble than you can handle.
Who was it?
The other American asking about his friend. Where are you going?
Upstairs. To take Monsieur Westcott a candle, like the fat man told me.
Be sure the fat man told you, or else...
I'm sure. Very sure. Jack. Jack, I brought you a candle. Are you asleep? Wake up, Jack. Please wake up. Please. Maybe if I shake him. Wake up. Oh, I hate to slap you, but your life depends on it.
What is it?
Wake up, wake up.
Cecilia, look here. Jack. Jack. Luckily, he's still asleep. Come, Cecilia. Let our friend sleep. I'm so sick. So dizzy and sick. Why didn't she let me sleep? Oh, I feel paralyzed. I can't move at all. Just as if I'm drugged. Maybe if I concentrate on the room, I'll go to sleep. Funny. Funny that a French gambling house should have a bedroom. What is an old English four-poster bed doing in a French room anyway? What a heavy canopy over my head. So solid looking. Almost as if it were made of steel. The mattress is so hard. I must concentrate on something. The picture above my head. Just even with the canopy. An evil-looking Spaniard. With five feathers in his head. The eyes moved. I'm certain of it. The eyes moved. I wonder if I dare look up again. I was sure there were five feathers. Now there are only four. Four feathers. Three feathers. I wonder who's outside my door. I'll try to sleep. No, look at the picture. What? The feathers have disappeared. I can barely even see the face. God in heaven. The canopy is being lowered on me. That's what it is. The canopy. It can't move. The paper thin corpse. Oh, I gotta move it. Come closer. Oh, they've squashed me. Oh, I must move. I can't do it. It's almost down. Halfway down. Go, I move. Oh, just to crawl out of bed. Oh, if I get a crawl, I'd crawl out of here. Safer than that horrible contraction. Now to get out of here. The window. Open the window slowly. I'll crawl to the window. Now, if I can push the window open slowly, very slowly.
The bed must have clamped down on him by now. Listen to me, men.
Push the window open. Oh, it's stuck.
Be sure and deliver the money back to me.
There. Now to open it wide and crawl through.
You can raise the canopy now. Let's go in, gentlemen.
Help! Help somebody!
Get the bed didn't work the first time, Mr. Westcott. I've ways and means of making it work the second, and perhaps it would be more pleasant to watch life ebb out in front of me.
No.
Place him carefully on the bed.
Let me go.
Good. The This ought to prove most enjoyable, Mr. Weston. It's a pity you haven't my detached viewpoint. Put him in. Then lower the canopy.
No! 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 No!
Miss Wimber, up this way! Hurry, Mr. Loriot, I can hear the bed moving!
Cecilia, you fool! Get Jack out of that bed!
Jack, boy, here, hold on to me. I'll drag you out.
Don't you put your hand on me, Loriot.
Box into there.
I'll take care of the
boss. I'm all right, Burke. Don't worry about me. I'm Cecilia.
I'll help her.
Let me go, Cecilia. Don't push me.
Help me,
don't.
Mario. Help, help. No, you don't, Batman.
You little.
No, you don't. You're on the mic of your Frankenstein.
Ah!
There. Try to get out of your own bed now.
Well, Inspector Duval, that's the story. Loriot and Burke were waiting outside all the time. They saw me at the window, and Cecilia let them in.
Close shave, eh?
A lucky escape. Loriot and I pulled him out of the bed just in time, and Cecilia pushed the fat man under the canopy as it closed down.
Must have been a horrible sight, Burke.
Well, what about Cecilia, Inspector? What would they do to her?
Unfortunately, the police can't find her. And I've instructed them not to look too hard.
We have heard the story, a terribly strange bed. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
There it is.
Heels.
Do I win? Do I win?
Everybody's a winner with old time radio.
True.
Everybody's a winner.
True. Well,
so you know what I get a kick out of these weird circles? The budget of $15 they put these together with. No music, precious little sound effects. And most of the stories were classic stories, classic meaning public domain, so they didn't have to pay for the story idea. You know, so. Now, this is one that I think was an original because they saw a fat guy and they decided to build a story around this fat guy who loved dead bodies. Yeah, so.
But this confused me because there's a radio show called The Fat Man.
Which will be coming up next, actually.
Woo-hoo. And there's a Dashiell Hammett. So, Dale, this... did you... Were you... Oh, no.
Erie House Radio barely remembers to bring you Gar's moral of the story.
Meanie, meanie, chili meanie, the spirits are about to speak. All right, so, where was it? Hang on. Oh, a grape press is great for grapes, not so much for people. All right, there you go. That's what I got.
Okay.
So, Dale, were you able to find the bell in our story?
Yeah, at the end. For whom the bell tolls.
No! Well, I called Dave and
there
said,
was not
Dave,
a bell?
Is the bell?
Heard a bell? I heard a bell.
No.
Yeah, there
the bell
kind of
was actually
bell wrong in that, but yeah, but it wasn't part of the story. The bell that was part of the story was the
La Belle Tavern.
Yep. The La Belle Tavern. Yep.
Other than that, there's no bell. No bell. I called up Dave and was like, Dave, no bell.
No bell prize either.
No, Dave.
Well, since
no
we
bell.
Alluded to the fat man, this one's from Australia, no, Dave?
This is Australia. This is, you know, and I think they were the American Scripps. They played it off like an American show. Of course, the American show was with J. Scott Smart and ran for like 4 or 5 years. And yet there's only like half a handful of episodes of the original ones. And I'm a big fan of the original. But this guy's not bad. This is an Australian taking over the scripts and placing it in New York and all kinds of things. So it's very interesting. And it's not bad. You get used to it. It's disappointing not to have J. Scott Smart. He was truly the fat man.
Yes. It says most of the American episodes did not survive.
Yeah, I don't understand, because ABC, which is where it aired, almost all their programs, because of their budget, was pre-recorded around the convenience of their stars.
Uh-huh.
So why they don't have more of these is just beyond comprehension to me, because almost all their shows were all pre-recorded.
I extrapolated the date because it says that the Australian Broadcasting Corporation on September 9th, 1954, and ran through 1955 for a total of 50 days. I extrapolated the date from there. Yeah.
And
knowing that
called...
this was the... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, this one was called Murder Rings a Bell.
Uh-huh.
And...
And it had a broadcast date of Thursday, January 13th, 1954. Sometimes Pepto-Bismol comically sponsored the show.
Episode number 21.
What? Oh, episode 19.
There he goes into that drugstore. He's stepping on the scales.
239 pounds. Fortune, danger.
Who is it? The Fat Man. And now here's the Fat Man in Murder Rings a Bell. Before noon when I walked up to Lung Toy's antique shop. It was in a pretty crummy neighborhood over near the river, and I wondered why a guy as well known as Toy would keep his shop there. He must have made a lot of dough in his day, and I'd heard of him many times. But I'd never met him. When he called me that morning, he said it was urgent and insisted that I come to see him right away.
Good morning. You would like to buy something?
I'm looking for...
Certainly. I have some beautiful mandarin shawls. They're in this room back here.
But I don't want...
This way, please. Just follow me.
Okay, brother, okay.
In here, if you please. You will pardon, Mr. Runyon. I must take precautions.
Whatever you say, it's your show. Are you Toy?
Yes, Mr. Runyon. I am Lung Toy.
Why the mystery act, Toy?
You will sit down, yes?
Thanks.
There are those who watch me, Mr. Runyon. We must be careful. That is why I did not wish to come to your office. That is why I asked that you come to me here.
Okay. Why are you being watched?
As the vulture watches the hunter to lead him to the feast, so do my enemies watch me.
I see.
Yes, Mr. Runyon. You see, I know the whereabouts of something valuable, and I want it. That is why I asked you to come here this morning. I want you to get it for me.
If you know where it is, why don't you get it yourself?
I would be followed. And if I succeeded in acquiring the object, I might not return.
Oh, like that, huh? What is this thing you want to get hold of?
A black lacquered box or chest known as the Laughing Lotus.
Why is it so valuable?
It is very rare and very old. It was once the jewel case of the Emperor Sing Fu, and its value as an antique is extreme.
You know where the box is now?
Yes. At the moment, it is in the hands of people who are completely unaware of its value.
And how do I go about getting the box for you?
It is not what you are thinking. I have no desire to acquire it in an illegal manner. I want you to buy it for me. I might add that I am prepared to pay you rather well if you do as I desire.
Yeah? How well?
If you conclude the purchase in a satisfactory manner, I will pay you $500. If you fail to make the purchase, your fee will be $250.
Why should I fail to buy it if the owners don't know its real value?
The box is being sold this afternoon at public auction. It is just possible that there may be higher bidders.
How high do I go?
You accept my offer, then?
Yeah. I'll give it a whirl.
Here is $5,000. Send it all if necessary. I think that sum will be more than sufficient. Unless...
Unless what?
Unless the knowledge of the box's whereabouts has fallen into the hands of those who also know its worth.
Okay, Toy. Now give me $250.
As you wish.
Thanks. You can give me the balance when I deliver the box to you. One more thing. How do I recognize this?
It will be simple. The box is about 1 foot in length and 6 inches in width. It is black lacquer, and the lock is of a particularly unique design. It is made of ivory and beautifully carved in the design of the lotus flower. This lock is one of the reasons for the great value of the chest.
The ivory lock, huh?
It is the only one of its kind in existence. It was made by the ancient and renowned Chinese locksmith Sun Yongwei in the year 400 BC. It has a complicated combination, the mechanization of which involves the proper balancing of a number of hidden and delicate ivory tumblers.
And this combination, do you have it?
He who is trapped and tortured by the enemy cannot disclose that which he does not know, Mr. Russell.
Meaning?
A meaning that once you have acquired the box, you will bring it at once to me with all speed and precaution.
And if I don't?
If you don't, Mr. Bundy, your ancestors may well rejoice in the reunion which will soon take place.
Well, who are you, beautiful?
You keep erratic office hours, Mr. Runyon. I've been waiting 40 minutes for you to come in.
I don't remember any appointment this morning.
I didn't have an appointment, though I have a job I think you'll be interested in.
What makes you think I'll be interested in the job?
The fee I'll give you for getting something back that was stolen from me. Say, $1,000.
How did you get in my office?
Why, I just walked in.
That won't do, sweetheart. The door to this office was locked when I left at 9:30 this morning.
But it wasn't locked. Maybe you had another visitor before I got here.
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, what are you... Keep your hands off my pocketbook. Who do you...
Sit down, beautiful, or I'll have to spank you.
You lay a hand on me and I'll have you arrested.
Go ahead. The cops don't like illegal entry either.
You think I broke into your office?
Uh-huh. What were you after?
I don't know what you mean. I told you the door was unlocked.
It's not in this bag.
Of course not. I'm not after anything. I want you
it
to...
It could be somewhere else.
Don't you dare touch
me. Don't worry, sweetheart. I'm not going to search you. Maybe you are telling the truth.
Of course I am.
Of course. That's a lot of cash for a beautiful girl to be carrying around. Where'd you get it?
That's none of your business.
Everything is my business when I'm working for you.
You're not working for me yet. And I'm not so sure that I want you to.
Okay, sister, there's the door.
No. No, wait. I need your help. I really do.
Good. I'll just take $1,000 then. Here's your pocketbook. And I'll start talking. What's your name and what was stolen?
My name is June Frost.
What was stolen?
A very valuable antique. A Chinese box. A little larger than a cigar box. It's called the Laughing Lotus.
I see.
I missed it about a week ago.
Couldn't the police find it?
I didn't go to the police.
Why not?
Because, Mr. Runyon, I was afraid.
Of what?
I was afraid the man who stole it might...
You know who stole it from you?
Yes, of course I do. That's why I came to you.
Who do you think it was?
An antique dealer named Lung Toy.
Next we have
It once belonged to the ancient Chinese emperor, Sing Fu. It's called the Laughing Lotus. Note the lock carved in the design of the lotus flower. The name originates from the intricate lock. The lotus lock is so well made, it is said to laugh at thieves. Note, too, the black lacquer. Now, if you wish to bid, simply raise your hand up high. Thank you. Now, we'll start at $100. Who'll bid 100? Oh, good. 100 from the stout gentleman on my right. 200, 200, 200. Yes, madam, yes, I see your hand. 200 from the tall lady in the black hat. 300, 300 from the small man sitting on the bench. Thank you, sir. Now, who'll make it fall? Four, 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 400 from the fat man. I beg your pardon, sir. I should say stout. now, 500. Who'll say five? Five. Come, ladies and gentlemen. Ah, that's better. Five from the little man on the bench. And six? Six? Who says six? Do I see six? I do. Six from the stout gentleman. Seven. Do I see seven? Seven from the tall lady? Oh, where are you, madam? Oh, yes, I see you now. Seven it is. Eight, do I see... What happened there? What's the matter?
He's fainted. This man has fainted.
Stand back.
He's fainted and he's there.
Why, it's the man who was bidding against you, sir.
Here. We'll see if we can't bring him around.
Is there a doctor present?
Never mind. This man doesn't need a doctor. He's dead.
Dead?
Yeah. Somebody shoved a silver-handled dagger in his back. Shut up! Quiet, everybody! Quiet! Man has just been murdered. Now, don't try to leave. The police will be here in a few minutes, and they'll want to question you. Hey, you auctioneer. Where's that tall woman? The one in the black hat who was bidding on the chest.
She was standing right over there, sir.
Yeah, but she's not there now. Where's that Chinese box?
Oh, there it is, over... Why, it's gone.
Who is the dead guy, Mac? Charlie French, a well-known trigger man with a record a mile long. He's been mixed up in every racket from Frisco to New York. Any fingerprints on the dagger?
No.
You better tell me all you know, Brad. And what about this tall woman in the black hat? I didn't notice her until she started bidding. She disappeared in the crowd during the confusion.
What were you doing at the auction?
Trying to buy something, but I didn't get it.
What?
A Chinese box called the Laughing Lotus.
Hey, I didn't know you were interested in antiques.
I'm not. The client of mine is.
Oh. Who is the client?
Lung Toy.
The old antique dealer.
That's right. You know him?
Sure. I've known him for years. Hey, I don't get his angle in this. What about this box?
He said it was very valuable and he was afraid to bid on it himself. That's why he sent me.
Hey, maybe Lung Toy can explain something we found in the murdered guy's pocket.
What?
This piece of paper with Chinese writing on it. Here.
Thought it was been torn away. Where's the rest of it?
That's all there was. Lung Toy's Chinese. He ought to be able to tell us what it means.
Yeah. But there's somebody else who isn't Chinese who might tell us more about it.
Come in. Mr. Lung.
Yeah.
I didn't expect you so soon. Did you get it?
No.
What happened?
You're too beautiful to be such a liar.
What do you mean?
Fix a couple of drinks, baby, and let's start over again. And this time I want the truth.
But I've told you the truth.
Quit lying. The box was never stolen from you because you never had it.
Where is it then?
A tall woman who wears a black hat has it.
A tall woman? But where did she get it?
She stole it this afternoon at the auction.
The auction? What auction?
How about that drink, sweetheart?
Here.
Okay, let's start again. Who's Charlie French?
Charlie French is here?
You dropped your drink.
Where is he? Where did you see him?
On a slab in the morgue.
Dead? Charlie dead? But how? Where?
A Chinese dagger in his back.
Chinese dagger? No, you're lying. You're trying to frighten me.
You're wrong, sweetheart. Charlie's dead. You'd better start talking straight.
Yes, I'll tell the truth.
That's better. Who's the tall woman?
I don't know. I can't understand that. I'm afraid.
Afraid of what?
After what happened to Charlie, I'm afraid I may be next. The Laughing Lotus is very valuable, Mr. Runyon. And whoever has it may be in danger of...
But you haven't got it.
No, I haven't got it. But I have something just as important.
What?
This paper with Chinese writing on it. Here, I'll show you. It's half of the combination to the lock.
Return to the Fat Man in just a few moments. You're listening to Erie House Radio.
What good is half a combination?
Well, you gotta get the other.
If the lock's broken, then it might, that might be all you need.
That's true.
Or if this were the movies, they'd just take a gun and shoot it open.
There you go.
Yep.
I prefer the direct method.
Uh-huh.
I'm the kind of guy that'll kill a mouse with like a cannon.
I don't know how that hole got in the floor like that, honey. Yeah.
I don't know. I was just chasing a mouse, and one thing led to another.
Unfortunately, that hole now leads to a new way for more mice to come in.
Yes, exactly. Which was my plan from the beginning.
So, I ran across this little tidbit that said the Fat Man radio series, the Pepto-Bismol, comically sponsored the show for upset stomach and indigestion for overeating if you're a fat guy, I think.
Yes. Yes. That's the American version, yeah. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah. The Australian version didn't have a sponsor.
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. Yeah, because it ran pretty close to the full half hour. So.
Yeah. It was brought to you by kangaroos.
Well, it could be that at the time it was maybe like the BBC where they were government-sponsored programs in a way that the people paid for them.
Oh, right. Yeah, we don't know that much about the Australian
government
Broadcasting Corporation.
Government
juice. I like it.
And that,
better than
more mice. More mice.
Brought to you by cannons.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't know that much about the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Do we? I don't.
We do not. No. I do know that on 9/11, when we first started getting information, because New York was such an epicenter for internet and such, and the news, the first information we started getting through was from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, the ABC, that was there in Australia. Then the BBC stuff started coming through. And then when they took out the pictures, they started paring down, taking out pictures to get information about what the heck was happening and going on there in New York and elsewhere.
It is amazing. Let's go ahead and wrap up the Fat Man.
The Fat Man
from Australia. Murder rings a bell.
Long Toy can tell us where the Chinese dagger came from, Brad. He's an expert on Chinese antiques. I think he can tell us more than that, Mac. Here's his shop. Let's go in. Yeah. Hey, what's that? It sounds whenever anybody opens the front door, so Toy will know he's got a customer. Sort of a Chinese version of the old country store.
Ah, Mr. Onion. It is indeed fortunate that you come at this time. I have a friend here who... Why, Lieutenant McKenzie.
Hiya, Long.
It is indeed a pleasure to see you after so long a time. May I present my friend, Mr. David Hawkins?
How do you do, gentlemen?
How are you?
Mr. Hawkins is a collector of rare antiques, Mr. Runyon. It was at his request that I hired you to acquire the Laughing Lotus.
I see.
Yes, Mr. Runyon. Where is the chest?
I didn't get it.
But why? Where is it? What happened?
A guy was murdered, and during the confusion, a tall woman in a black hat got it.
Did you see her closely?
Not very. Whoever she is, the box won't do her any good without an axe.
Why not?
She hasn't got the combination.
How do you know that?
Because I've got it. Take a look at these two pieces of paper, Toy. Hey, where'd you get the other half of the paper, Brian?
Never mind. What about it, Tony?
Yes. Yes, it is the combination.
Here, give it to me.
Not so fast, Hawkins. I think I'll just keep it a while.
No, you can't. I have a right to that combination.
You've got a right to nothing yet.
But if I get the box...
You didn't get the box. So the combination won't do you any good.
Well, that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
In that case, I'll say good day, gentlemen. I think our business is finished.
I am so sorry, Mr. Hawkins.
What does the writing on the paper say, Toy?
It is in code, but it is the combination to the Laughing Lotus. It must be deciphered.
Can you do it?
Yes, but it will take time. Where did you find it?
Half of it was found in the pocket of the guy murdered at the auction. The other half came from a girl. A beautiful girl with blue-black hair done in a knot at the back of her head. The last time I saw her, she was wearing a green suit. Matatoy.
This girl.
Yeah, June Frost. Do you know her?
I do not know her, but I have seen her.
Where?
Here in my shop. Day before yesterday.
What was she doing here?
She bought something from me.
What?
A pair of silver-handled Chinese daggers.
Quiet, sweetheart. You might frighten the other guests in the hotel.
What are you doing in my room?
Waiting for you.
How did you get in?
Haven't you heard, sweetheart? The same way you got into my office.
Why were you searching my room?
I was looking for something.
What?
The truth, maybe.
The truth?
Yeah. Do you want to save me the trouble by telling it to me?
What do you mean? I told you the truth.
Not yet. Listen, sweetheart. You hired me to do a job for you, but you lied all the way.
No, I didn't.
I don't like working for liars, and I won't work for a murderer.
A murderer? You don't think I...
That's just what I do think. And if you don't start telling the truth, I'm going to pin a murder up right on your beautiful head.
No, you can't. I didn't murder Charlie. You do believe me, don't you?
No.
So that's the way it is.
That's the way it is, baby.
Then we're through.
Uh-uh. Not yet.
Give me the paper.
I haven't got it.
Where is it? What did you do with it?
I gave it to Lung Toy.
Toy? You gave it to Lung Toy? You fool.
It's no good, baby. Where are the daggers?
What daggers?
The ones you bought from Toy day before yesterday.
Why, they're here, right here in this drawer. Well, what's that got to do with...
What's the matter?
Daggers. They're gone.
This is it. Lung Toy's Antique Shop.
Right.
Here you are. Keep the change.
Oh, thanks.
Hello, Brad.
What are you doing here, Mac?
Official business. Where's Lung Toy?
Upstairs.
I want to talk to him.
Won't do any good.
Why not?
Because we found the other silver-handled dagger.
Where?
In Lung Toy's back.
Hey, don't make so much noise. You want to wake everybody in the hotel?
Who are you?
I'm the bellboy. You better run along, mister. It's late.
Listen, I've got to talk to Miss Frost, the lady who's staying in this room.
Well, she's not in now anyway.
How do you know?
Because I saw them go out a little while ago.
Them? Was somebody with her?
Yeah.
What did they look like?
It wasn't a he, it was a she.
A woman?
That's right. A tall woman. A tall woman in a black hat.
Can I help you, sir?
Yes. What room is Mr. David Hawkins registered in?
Mr. Hawkins? Just a moment, sir. What was that first name again, sir?
David.
David Hawkins, a tall, distinguished-looking man with gray hair.
Oh, yes, yeah, I remember now. I'm afraid you're too late.
Too late? Where is he?
I don't know. He was registered here for nearly 10 days.
Oh,
he checked out at the hotel about an hour ago.
You're crazy, Runyon. Why do you want to come back to Lung Toy's place at this hour of the night? It's after 2 a.m.
I'm crazy, all right, for ever letting that Frost stay out of my sight.
Well, looks like she murdered Toy.
That's what you think, Mac.
Well, get this tall woman. Who's she?
I don't know, but she and June Frost left the hotel together.
And why was Toy murdered?
Look, Mac, that Chinese box is locked. It can't be opened without the combination to the ivory tumblers.
Ah, they can break it open.
And ruin the box? Not a chance. No, Mac. Toy was killed because he had the combination. It wasn't on him when we found him. And we didn't find it among any of his papers in the shop.
Then the murderer got it.
Maybe. Nobody knew Toy had the paper but you and me and June Frost.
How did she know it?
Because I told her I'd given it to Toy.
But why are we coming back here now? I don't get that.
I want to look the place over again.
But we went over it this evening. We didn't miss a thing.
I think we did.
What?
I don't know, Mac. But I've had the feeling all night that something was wrong. Something was out of place in that shop.
Out of place?
That's right. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to find out.
Well, here we are. Come on, let's go.
The lights are over here behind the counter.
Okay, look all you want to. I'm going to sit down. I'm tired.
You're going to be a lot more tired before you get to sleep again.
What are you talking about?
We're going to stay here for a while, and we're going to stay awake.
It won't take you long to give the place a going over. Now just quit wasting time talking and look around.
I've already found what I was looking for.
Then what do you want to stay here for?
To catch the murderer.
You think the murderer will come back here?
I'm sure of it.
But why? If the killer got the combination,
the murderer didn't get it, Mac. It's still here, right where Lung Toy hid it.
What are you talking about?
Didn't you notice anything strange as we came in? Anything different?
Different? What?
I knew there was something, but I couldn't figure it until we came in just now.
What is it?
Look here, Mac. See?
No. You're nuts. You just opened the door. Looks okay to me.
The gong, Mac, the gong.
Gong? What about... Oh.
It didn't ring when they came in, and it didn't ring this afternoon after Toy was murdered.
But I still don't see what that's got to do with... Why didn't it ring?
That's what I'm going to find out right now. Here, give me a hand with this chair.
Right.
Hold it while I stand there.
Okay. Is it disconnected?
No, everything looks okay, but...
Then why won't it ring?
Because this was stuffed into the gong where the hammer hits.
What is it?
Two pieces of paper, Mac. That's where Toy hid the combination to the Laughing Lotus.
We've been sitting here in the dark behind this counter for over an hour, Runyon. I don't think the killer's coming back.
Keep your shirt on, Mac.
Can you see the door?
No, but we'll hear it. Remember now, when I nudge you, snap the lights on and come up with your gun in your hand.
Okay.
Hold it. I think I hear something.
What's that?
Shh.
Here's the flashlight. We'd better hurry. It must be here somewhere. We've got to find it. We've got to.
Don't move, ladies.
Two women. The tall woman in the black hat.
Yeah, and my beautiful little playmate who buys daggers. You weren't by any chance looking for this, were you, ladies?
The combination.
That's right. Both have.
Look out.
Don't move, beautiful, or you'll get it, too. Did you get the tall one, Mac?
Yeah, she's dead, all right. She shouldn't have tried to pull her gun. Shame to shoot a woman.
It's not a woman, Mac.
Huh?
Look again.
It's a wig.
Yeah, it slipped in the fall.
It's a man. It's Hawkins, the guy Toy was trying to buy the box for.
Please, Mr. Runyon, I didn't kill Toy or Charlie. Hawkins did it. He made me come with him.
Sure, beautiful, sure.
Oh, it's the truth, I tell you, the truth.
Where's the Laughing Lotus?
It's checked at Grand Central Station. Hawkins has the check slip in his pocket.
Why is it so valuable, beautiful?
I'll tell you. I'll tell you everything, only please, you must believe me. I didn't...
Keep talking.
The inside of the chest, underneath the black lacquer, is pure jade. It's worth more than $200,000.
No wonder nobody wanted to break it open.
What about Charlie French?
He and Hawkins and I knew about the Laughing Lotus. Hawkins hired Toy to buy it.
And you and Hawkins crossed French, but he had the other half of the combination, right?
Oh, that's right, but I didn't want it. David Hawkins forced me into it. He made me do it all.
And that's why he dressed as a woman at the auction and killed French?
Yes.
You did break into my office, didn't you?
Yes. I thought you had the box. I knew Toy had called you, but I didn't kill Toy. Oh, you do believe me, don't you?
Sure. Don't you believe him, Mac?
Yeah.
Then you'll help me. You won't let them take me.
You and I'll have a swell time, beautiful.
You do like me, then?
Oh, you're a knockout.
Oh, thank you. I'll do anything for you.
Hey, wait a minute, Runyon. What are you trying to pull, anyway?
We'll paint the town red, beautiful. See all the shows, eat the best food.
You're wonderful. When do we start?
In about 20 years, when they let you out of prison.
Prison?
That's right, beautiful. Be sure and look me up. I spend my life in getting into trouble and getting out of it. But at the same time, I generally manage to get some other people in and out of trouble, too. Be seeing you again. So long.
It sounded very American for an Australian show.
Yes, very much so.
I didn't hear anybody. Nobody mentioned a Barbie on a shrimp or something like that.
Shrimp on the Barbie.
And actually, their American accents were much better than their Asian accents.
Yes.
If you noticed.
Yes.
What you trying to say there, Willis?
Nothing. I ain't saying nothing. That's your job.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
For whom the gong tolls, it calls for number 28 with three fortune cookies. Boy, boy. There you go.
That one guy in that story sounded like he really wanted to sound just like Peter Lorre.
That was a cheap ripoff.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
And the previous thing we listened to, which was The Weird Circle, the fat man sounded kind of like Peter Lorre to me.
Yes, did. He tried
another
cheap Peter Lorre impersonator.
Another cheap one, I tell you.
Ugh.
What's up with those guys? I tell you.
That's right. They should ask us. We're a lot cheaper than they are.
That's for sure.
That's right.
And rightfully so.
Okay. We earned it right to be cheap.
We're not just cheap. We're free.
It's about the same. And we should be.
I think if we were cheap, we'd charge a penny. But we're cheaper than that.
Well, there's three of us that we'd have to charge three pennies.
You ever try to split a penny in three? It requires
that's
a railroad track.
That's what I said. We have to do three pennies. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a hammer and chisel. I think we could do it.
You ever try to flatten out a penny on the railroad track? Either of you?
I have seen the results of one, but I was never there.
You're not.
I didn't get to see them derail the train.
I was always skeptical of it because, you know, I think I tried it a couple of times and all I did was lose a penny.
Yep.
Never found
it. The penny went, see you later. Yeah, flipped off, right?
Bing,
yeah.
Bing, bing, and it's gone.
Yeah, probably shot up underneath a train for about 2 miles, and you know, I'm not going that far for a penny. I am not.
Right.
Going that far for a penny.
Right. Right. I never did. I was given the warning that if you did that, you'd derail the train. And I was like,
I heard that. I don't think that's...
Pretty sure that's an urban legend.
I don't know. I don't know how a train grips the tracks, but okay.
It's called incredible amount of weight.
That too.
That's one of them.
Hence the fat man. See where
train,
we went?
Trains tend to be a little heavy.
Yeah, they do. They do.
It's hard to stop a train.
It's hard to start a train.
Especially if you don't have a key.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
oh,
especially
yeah.
uphill.
Ever heard of anybody hot-wiring a train? I think not.
It's early. It's early.
Take a lot of hot wire.
Got enough time here for Death Tolls a Requiem from Murder at Midnight. That's our last feature.
Well, Dale, you said it wrong. You know how you have to say Murder at Midnight? Murder at Midnight.
Yeah.
I thought I'd let the host say it.
Oh, okay.
Murder at Midnight. That guy.
Yeah.
It's great. And I love the name of it, but I was completely disenfranchised. Maybe that's the wrong word. When I found out that this great show never aired near midnight.
Yeah. That's true.
Not once.
And this one was originally broadcast
Wednesday, August 7th, 1946. Episode what?
Episode number 19.
19.
Murder at Midnight.
Listen, do you hear them? Do you hear the bells?
Bells? I don't hear any bells, mister.
But I tell you, they're ringing.
Look, mister, the heat's got you. Well, you're in the middle of the desert right now. There ain't any bells within 100 miles of here.
But there must be. There has to be. Murderer? No! No! No, no, no!
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Death Tolls a Requiem. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story by Max Ehrlich is Death Tolls a Requiem.
I came into the room and quietly closed the door behind me. It was a room ready and waiting for death. The curtains were drawn, blotting out the bright afternoon sunlight. The air was hot and stifling. The silence oppressive and unearthly. I stared down at the face of the old man in the bed. The old man I hated. His eyes were closed, two sunken shadows against the white wrinkled skin. His waxen hand hung limply over the coverlet. For 3 days he'd lingered while I'd waited for him to die. Now for a moment I thought... But no, his pale lips moved. How are you feeling, Father?
I'm not long to go, my son. Not long. It's only the bells that keep me alive.
The bells?
Yes. Over there in the tower. I lie here and wait to hear them. They seem to rally me. I live for the sound of them, Father.
Yes, Father?
What time is it?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Peter must be there now. There in the tower, pulling on the ropes, starting them swinging. The Pedwick bells, Arthur. There they are, my son. Listen to them. Your inheritance. Listen to them ring. Oh, what music they make. What beautiful, vibrant music. They give me the strength, the will to live a little longer.
How I hated him, the sentimental old fool, my father. He'd spent $500,000 to bring those bells over from Pedwick, England, the place of his birth. And with them he'd brought the bell tower, brick by brick, and the English bell ringer, Peter Griggs. $500,000, my inheritance, hung in that bell tower. There was no money left, nothing. My father'd lost everything, left me nothing. Nothing but those accursed bells. Ding dong, ding dong, they seemed to mock me, taunt me, jeer at me. I hated the very sound of them. But the old fool in the bed babbled on.
Oh, my son, those bells bring back the past to me. When I was a boy in Pedwick, I heard them toll out the hour, every hour. I married your mother to the sound of those blessed bells. And I buried her to the sound of them.
Stop! Stop raving about those bells! Stop it!
There's evil in your face. Evil.
You cheated me out of my inheritance. Left me penniless. You cheated me, do you hear? Listen to the bells. Yes, they know. Can't you hear them jeering at me, mocking at me? You're penniless, they're saying. Penniless. Penniless. Die, you old fool. Die. 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 You bought those bells. Now let them ring your requiem. Bells stopped finally. My father lay there, dead. I turned from his white, still face and half walked, half stumbled toward the bell tower across the grounds of our estate. Something stronger than myself drew me to it. I entered the tower and stared up into the gloomy belfry. Yes, there they were, the bells, gleaming dimly in the half-light, their bronze mouths yawning down at me. And then as I stared up at them, I heard a step behind me. Who's there?
Why, tis only me, Mr. Brooke. Tis only Peter.
Oh, I didn't see you standing there in the shadow.
So you've come in to look at my little brood, eh? You've come to admire my 3 children.
Yes.
Ah, Mr. Brooke, in all the world, there are no finer bells than my wee babies. 'Twas none other than Christopher Hodson himself who cast them in the 17th century. Aye, the master himself. My father rung them, and his father before him, and his father before him.
And these are the bells my father paid $500,000 for.
Aye, and he got them cheap, sir. These are historic bells, known to all of England. And the folk of old Pedwick parted with them hard. They gave him as a gift, you might say. Your father gave the town an orphan asylum and a hospital. And now he has the bells.
No, they'll hang up there forever.
Aye, and 'tis well, for they're in good hands. Your father is of old Pedwick, sir. And like me, he loves the bells and knows what they say when they talk.
Peter, father will never hear the bells again.
Hey, what do you mean by that, sir?
He died 15 minutes ago.
Huh? Oh, Mr. Brooke, he dead?
Yes.
Dust we are, and to dust we shall return. So it is written, and so shall it be. Oh, he was a fine man, sir.
Thank you, Peter.
Both me and my children up there. We'll miss him. Aye, we'll miss him sore. Oh, little Davy.
Big George! Oh, my beautiful Betty, my pretty hussy! You hear? The master is dead.
You call the bells by names? You talk to them?
I like a father to his children, and they talk to me.
They talk to you. The bells talk to you.
Why not? They have tongues, and they have hearts and souls. Come, my babies. The good master is dead. Come, little Davy. Cry the sad tidings. Come, big George, awake. Cry, my one heart of... Weep, my winsome Betty. Weep, girl. Weep, little dear. The master is dead. Sing. Sing a sad song, my lady one. My beloved one. Higher. And higher. Weep. Weep, my babies. Pour out your tears. Cry out to the countryside. The master is dead.
I watched him, fascinated, as he pulled one rope, then another, and worked another bell by means of his foot thrust through a loop in a third rope. The bells rang and clanged, throbbed and echoed, beat against my brain in jangling tones and overtones. I looked up at them as they swayed, and their mouths seemed to accuse me of my father's death. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand it any longer. I turned and ran from the bell tower. After my father's funeral, I dropped in at the office of Frederick Denny, my father's attorney and executor of what was left of the estate. There were certain things I wanted to discuss.
So you want to tear down the Brook Memorial Tower and sell the bells?
Yes, Mr. Denny. From what my father told me, they have considerable value.
Yes, Arthur, they do. Their intrinsic value, aside from their worth as historic relics and antiques, runs into hundreds of thousands. I've already had two offers of purchase.
You have?
Yes. One from a university, one from a museum.
Good.
However, the bells are not for sale.
What? Mr. Denny, you know the condition of the estate. Why, I'm penniless. Dad left me nothing. Nothing. Unless I can realize something from the bells.
I'm sorry, Arthur, but the terms of your father's will are quite specific.
Then I'll break the will. I'm my father's rightful heir, and whatever I can sell those bells for belongs to me.
I'm sorry, my boy. I drew up this will myself, and I can assure you it's airtight.
There was nothing I could do. Nothing. I was beaten, and I knew it. And day after day, night after night, every hour on the hour, I heard those blasted bells. Ding dong. Ding dong, they mocked me, taunted me, jeered at me, laughed at me.
You've been cheated, Arthur Brooke. You've been cheated, Arthur Brooke.
They seemed to talk to me. They talked to Peter the bell ringer, and now they talk to me. Mocked me, every hour, on the hour. Oh, I hated them, cursed them, blocked my ears against them, but they kept on ringing and ringing and ringing until I thought I'd go mad. Finally, I could stand it no longer. I had to silence those hateful bells once and for all. I had to still their cursed tongues forever. That night late, I went to the bell tower, fevered, in a kind of frenzy, determined to blot out their voices somehow. I entered the bell tower. Peter was there, ringing the bells. Peter!
Hey, Mr. Brooks!
Stop ringing those bells! Stop it, I say!
Huh? Stop the bells?
Yes, now! Now, do you hear?
No! No, I will not! There's evil in your face. You don't like the bells like your father. You hate my little children. You mean them harm.
I told you to stop those bells. I'll make you stop.
Mr. Brooke, what are you going... No, no. My throat. You choked me.
You'll never ring those cursed bells again.
I can't breathe.
Quiet now. Quiet. The bells were still. The awful pressure in my head went away. It had been easy to strangle Peter. His foot had caught in the pedal noose of the bell rope. He never had a chance. Now I had to make it look like an accident, like suicide. I picked the bell ringer up, tied one end of the bell ropes around his neck, and gave him a long push. Back. And forth. Back. And forth. He swung in the bell tower like a grotesque pendulum, the rope creaking under his weight. Well, little Davy up there, Big George, Pretty Betty, why don't you talk now, eh? Why don't you talk now?
Mad with the sound of the bells, shaking his fist and laughing at his bronze torturers as he stops them from striking 12 for
murder at midnight.
Already got a good murder, and we're only halfway through.
Two murders. Hooray.
Just keep piling them up. Stuff them bodies in the trunk and have a good time.
Get another one, and we'll have an Inner Sanctum mystery.
There you go.
Yeah.
True.
Or Dave's going to yell out, Yahtzee! Right? <Yeah.
laughs> No, you need five for a Yahtzee.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Yep, we got to keep going. We got more murders.
You betcha.
You got to get up to five. Yeah. Oh, boy. We like our murders at midnight. Yep. It's just such a great... I'm amazed that they came up with such a great title, but they never came up to actually performing it at midnight.
Well, question. Back then, how late did radio run on the air before they signed up?
Yeah, most radio stations shut down. I don't know that any of them
at
ran
11?
Completely overnight.
Mm-hmm.
That would might
well,
be.
Suppose
back when
did,
I was growing up. TV would sign off at 11:30 or something.
Sometimes, or 1 in the morning, or 2 in the morning. I remember different times.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of your radio stations even then would do that. We had a couple right here in the Akron area that signed
Maybe
off
that's
at
why
the,
they...
what
they
sign on at dusk and or sign off at dusk and sign on at dawn. Is that what they were supposed to do?
Don't know. That
to
would
clear
be
the airwaves.
Yeah.
Clear
usually
when
the
I want
airwaves.
To clear the, usually when I want to clear the airwaves, I just grab a box of Kleenex. Yeah.
I ate chili the day before.
A Q-tip will do that.
Yeah. It could. You gotta be careful where you put that thing, though.
Chili the day before will clear a room, if not the air.
Hello.
Yeah.
I thought that was beans. No.
There are beans in chili, believe it or not.
That will clear out of the room.
Actually, a Texan will tell you it is not chili if you put beans in it because they have like almost all meat in there. Chili. It's true.
Texan will also tell you everything's big there.
Yes.
Whatever that's about.
It's a big state. It takes up a lot of space.
Yeah.
I
don't get too close to Texans. It's just me.
Probably. I don't know. I have an in-law there that needs to stay there. Because they are truly
I forgot what I was doing.
Yeah. Hope they're listening. All right. And speaking of my feelings on that, our show is Murder at Midnight.
I liked my in-laws. I don't know.
Did you? I liked my first set. I didn't like the wife.
My My in-laws were awesome. So was my wife until she divorced me.
Yeah. It always works like that. Isn't that true?
Isn't that weird? Isn't that crazy?
Because they don't start out nasty and then turn nice after you divorce them. That would be weird.
It was great until she left. Then it was just quiet.
There you go.
I wouldn't have minded quiet at that point in my life.
Oh, I'm with you there.
Man, you guys got such a bad rub. I don't know what was going on with you guys, but man, rough stuff.
Oh.
So bad.
Uh-oh, CW's trying to direct us back to the show.
You know?
Oh, is she? Hold on, radio.
She certainly got more sense than I do.
Especially after that divorce. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Let's move on to the exciting conclusion of Death Tolls a Requiem. Murder at Midnight.
And now here is Arthur Brooke again continuing his story. There was an investigation of Peter's death. The county medical examiner and I went to the bell tower and looked at the bell rope on which Peter's body had been found hanging.
The way I see it, Mr. Brooke, it's a clear case of suicide. The deceased fastened this rope around his neck, climbed up on the belfry ladder, and flung himself out into space.
Yes, Mr. Holcomb, it looks as though he did just that.
Mr. Brooke, there's one question I want to ask you.
Me? What is it?
Well, a man usually doesn't commit suicide unless he has a motive. Did you notice anything peculiar about this bell ringer's behavior before this happened?
Why, no, nothing except that he was deeply depressed when my father died. You see, my father loved the bells as much as Peter did, and...
That might account for it. But I understand this English bell ringer was rather a queer duck anyway.
What's that?
Hmm? What?
Mr. Holcomb, the bells. They're ringing. How can they?
Take it easy, Mr. Brooke. The tower door is open and wind just came through. Made the bells tinkle a little.
Oh, yes, of course. It was the wind. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right, Mr. Brooke. After what you've been through, I don't blame you for being jumpy.
Finally, the verdict was official. Suicide. And for 2 weeks, the bell tower was closed and the bells silent. It was then that I had an idea. I went straight to the executor of my father's estate, Mr. Denny, and told him what was in my mind.
Arthur, I'm sorry, but what you ask is impossible. We can't take those bells down.
But, Mr. Denny, you've read the papers. This bell ringer's suicide has made a mockery out of the tower. All the cheap publicity in the newspapers, the sensationalism, the people coming to stare at the bells, Why, I feel that my father's memory is being desecrated.
I know, Arthur. The whole thing's been very unfortunate, but we cannot let you tear down the tower and sell the bells, as you know.
Yes, I know. The will, my father's will.
Precisely. And his last wish must be respected.
Very well, let the bells stay. But for the love of heaven, Mr. Denny, can they remain silent? Must they ring any more to remind everyone in town of the tragedy?
Your father specified that they must be rung on the hour, every hour, just as they did in England. And that's the way it'll have to be, Arthur. We're already negotiating for a new bell ringer.
Mr. Denny, listen, do you hear them?
Hear what?
Bells.
Bells?
Yes, can't you hear them? You must hear them, Mr. Denny, you must.
Oh, yes, I do now very faintly. Your sense of hearing, Arthur, is remarkably acute. Those bells are from the next town, Silver Valley. Sometimes you can hear them here when the wind's right.
Oh, why don't they stop? Why don't they stop talking?
Talking? Bells talking? What do you mean?
Oh, nothing.
Look here, Arthur, something's wrong. You're on edge, ill. Why don't you go away for a good long rest, say a month or so? It'd do you good.
Go away? Yes. Yes, why not? Rest. That's what I need. Rest and quiet. Away from the bells. There was a quaint little inn I knew in the mountains, 100 miles away. The food was good, and a golf course nearby, and, well, I made reservations. For a week, I ate,
slept, played golf, rested. And then one afternoon, I was in the lobby of the inn, chatting with the proprietor.
Enjoyed your stay here, Mr. Brooks?
Oh, yes, Frank. Fine, fine.
Well, you've been lucky in the weather. I never did see such nice weather. Well,
Frank!
Can...
What's that?
What's what?
Do you hear? Bells!
Bells? Of course I do. From the church at Greenville, 2 miles away.
But why are they ringing? Why are they ringing?
Mr. Brooks, what's come over you? It's Sunday, and that's...
Frank! Lady... Frank, I'm checking out.
Checking out? Now? But, Miss Brooke, you made reservations for a month.
I'm leaving now, do you hear? Right away, just as soon as I can get my bags packed. The bells. I had to get away from the bells. That was it. That was all I needed. I remembered a place when I was a boy. An island off the seacoast. There was an old fisherman there, a friend of mine, and I knew he'd put me up. The place was miles from anything, from the mainland, from bells. I took a train, chartered a small boat, and spent 3 quiet days there. Then, on the 4th day, as we were surf casting for striped bass.
All right, Mr. Brooke, let's see you cast way out into the surf. Nice long one that was. Now, if a striper just hooks onto that bait of yours, why, you're going... Well, what is it, Mr. Brooke?
I hear bells.
Bells? Why, sure you do. The Coast Guard's testing a new bell buoy out on those reefs over there. Oh, what's wrong, Mr. Brooke? You're as white as a sheet.
I've got to get away from here. I've got to get away. Bells, bells, bells. Everywhere I went, they pursued me, ringing their accusations in my ears. I left the island, got into my car, drove. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't care. I just had to get away from those bells. And then, some days later, I was driving through a desert area in the southwest. I was deep in the desert, reeling off mile after mile on the highway when suddenly from far off I heard bells. I set my teeth, gripped the steering wheel tight. Enough was enough. I'd fight them now. Fight them to the bitter end. I wouldn't let them master me, tear me apart, drive me mad. No! I had to beat them, and I'd do it now! I drove on and on and on, and the bells followed me. They must come from a train running parallel to the highway somewhere over the rim of the desert. Yes, it must be a train. It couldn't be anything else. Mile after mile I drove, and mile after mile the bells followed me. I began to wonder, when would the tracks cross the highway? Tracks always crossed highways somewhere. They just didn't run parallel indefinitely. And then off ahead, I saw some trucks and men. It was a construction crew fixing the road. I stopped the car and hailed the foreman.
What is it, mister?
Doesn't the train cross the highway somewhere up ahead?
Train? What train? There's no railroad in this area of the desert.
But there must be. I hear train bells.
Bells? I don't hear any bells, mister.
But I tell you, they're ringing.
Look, mister, you must have sunstroke or something. There ain't no train within 100 miles of here.
But there
no
must
bells
be.
Bells either.
There must be. There has to be. No. Now I knew what I had to do. I had to go back to the estate, back to the Brooke Memorial Tower, and destroy the accursed bells I'd inherited. I had to close their bronze mouths, pull out their wagging tongues, smash their glittering faces. They had possession of me. They were driving me out of my mind. I had to free myself of them once and for all. Only then would I be at peace. I headed for home. And every mile, every hour, the bells pursued me, ringing in my ears day and night, pounding and relentless. Back at the estate, I went into the gardener's toolhouse, picked out a heavy sledgehammer, headed toward the bell tower. A car was just coming up the driveway. It looked like Denny's, but I paid no attention. I ran into the bell tower and climbed the ladder into the belfry. Now is the time. There were the bells leering at me, grinning at me. I'd smash them now and forever. I lifted the sledgehammer and brought it down to the first bit. I'll smash you to bits. Why don't you break? Why don't you break? Arthur! What are you doing out there in the belfry?
I'll smash them! I'll break them to a thousand pieces! It's the last thing I do!
Arthur! You dumb man! Stop it, I say! Stop it!
Why don't they stop ringing? Why don't they stop? No! No, don't! Don't say it anymore!
I can't stand it any longer! I can't!
James, I must compliment you on this mental institution of yours. It's run very efficiently. One of the finest in the state.
Thank you, Professor.
Oh, by the way, it must be close to midnight. I didn't expect to stay here this late, but it was so interesting. And what is the time, anyway?
Well, I don't have a watch on me, Professor, but... just a second. Listen.
The bells! There they go again! There they go! Can't you hear them? Stop them! Stop them!
Ah, the time now, Professor Alvin, is exactly midnight.
How do you know that, Doctor?
That patient you just heard, Professor, the one who just cried aloud, is a very remarkable case. A human timepiece. He has no watch, of course, but every hour on the hour, he hears bells.
He hears bells every hour on the hour?
Precisely, Professor Alvin. And he's never more than a second or two out of the way.
And so a man lies on a bed in a padded cell and hears the bells ringing, ringing, every hour on the hour. Just as he once heard the real bells strike 12 for
murder at Michael Fitzmaurice, with music by Bert Berman. Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leader.
Man,
what? No more murders? I feel cheated.
I know. We got short of a murder there, but we'll make it up on another show sometime.
I'm sure we will.
Yep. Got time left here before we start our shameless self-promotions. What do we got here? How about a song or two?
Yeah. How about a moral or two?
or five.
Or
we
six.
Could do a, we could do a moral. Uh-huh. I mean, we had a radio program. We should probably have a moral. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
You can peel a bell and you can peel a banana, but they don't taste the same. Okay, there you go.
They do not. They do not.
And Lord knows
if they do,
tried.
It's time to get a new banana.
Yes. I have a coin.
You have one? Okay, good.
I have a coin.
I'm broke.
I have a it's made of wood, but it's a coin. It's got a picture of a zombie.
It's Friday and they broke already?
It's got a picture of a zombie on it, too.
A zombie coin.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yes, a zombie coin. Here we go.
What if the jukebox is going like that? Guess we'll find out.
Yay!
Ah, yes, indeed. Hold your hats, kids. It's Chico Marx, the piano-playing member of the Mad Marx Brothers.
Here, boss. I'll hold my hat, too.
I'll hold your coat and your vest, too, if you want to, Cheek, if you'll just get into one of those tunes of yours. You know, I'd suggest one that features the latest Chico Marx discovery. He's a composer, musician, singer, arranger, radio actor, always a lot of things. Very young fella, too, only 17 years old. Mel Torney, and he's going to sing one of those arrangements for which Chico Marx is so famous. This one entitled Abraham.
In an upper berth, just hear that choo-choo sound. I know that soon we're gonna be covering ground, and then I'll holler so the world will know. Here I go, I'm Alabama bound. Goodbye, blues. Birdies are singing, every old thing's in tune. Goodbye, blues. Nothing but laughter, morning and afternoon. I saw a rosebud in a stove, so I'm going where there's more. Goodbye, blues. Troubles are over, I'll be in clover soon. I'm Alabama bound. There'll be no heebie-jeebies hanging around. Just gave the meanest ticket man on earth every cent that I'm worth to put my tootsies in an upper berth. Just hear the choo-choo sound. I know that soon we're gonna be covering ground, and then I'll holler so the world will know. Here I
Cliff Edwards, and before that, Chico Marx Orchestra, along with a very, very young Mel Torme.
Yep.
Yeah, 17.
Velvet Trunk. It's 17. Hey, did any of you guys ever watch that show Sliders? I got a kick out of that.
Yes.
Is that the one where they make the little hamburgers?
No.
No,
where they slide into other parallel Earths. Anyway, one of the executive producers on that was Tracy Torme, which was his daughter, which was explained why he showed up on at least, Mel Torme showed up on at least two episodes of Sliders.
Oh, cool.
And in Night Court.
And in Night Court, yes. He was almost in every episode, at least his picture was. You know, they're rebooting that, and I don't think they have any of the original stars. Stop that. Stop that now.
I agree. Stop
that. Is your kitty being bad?
No, not at the moment.
Oh.
No, stop the rebooting.
Oh, yes, stop the rebooting, please.
Yeah.
Ugh. Ooh. Yeah.
All
right, so tomorrow night we'll be back. We've got a very, very special guest at 6:30 tomorrow. Tim Ahrens is coming back. It's his second book coming out in his dark...
Dark it's stuff. Goth type thing, right?
Dark creatures.
We need you here tomorrow because this is strictly out of my category.
Yeah, it's like fantasy type writing, maybe sword and sorcery you might consider it, or dark fantasy, gods and demons and all kinds of cool stuff. It's a series called Dark Creatures, and his first book when he was on earlier was called A Simple Game, and this is called The Grand Game. Ooh. So Tim will be here to tell us about that tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern, and then afterwards, do you got something going on with the twitches there, Gar?
It all depends. I'm on. I've had a migraine for 3 days, so I'm hoping it breaks. I'm medicated now, I don't know. So I don't know if I can hang out for 4 hours if I have that going on. But plans are, yes, 8 p.m. Eastern time, horrible sign, got to go, all that blibbly. So the swords and sorcery is not to be confused with swords and sandals, which is like Hercules versus the Moon Man and stuff like that.
They're different, especially because more the literary stuff. A lot of your a lot of your early Dungeons and Dragons. We'll talk about this maybe a little bit tomorrow. The early Dungeons and Dragons games was based on the writings of Tolkien and Michael Moorcock and others who write of such things. And I used to read I used to inhale quite a bit of that as a youth.
Yep. Please be here, CW. Please be here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't want to be stuck with me, do you?
Moi? Needed? Yes, you're.
No,
you're
just
needed.
That's completely out of my league. I just.
CW, you are always needed here.
That's
more stronger. CW, the better.
That's right.
Just like
keep
she had to
line.
Keep us in line tonight.
Yep.
Had to keep us in line tonight.
Yes. Yeah. When we go off script.
All right,
wait, there's a script.
We'll see you tomorrow at 6:30.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Don't come alone.
Don't come alone.
Shalom habarim, shalom habarim. Shalom halom.
Thank you, Vincent.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
It was all a bad dream.
Sometimes it's comforting to look at parts of your life and think that. Like a first marriage.
Or my 9,628 jobs. Yeah, that too.
Or milking a goat.
Milking a goat?
Cold hands.
Yeah.
Cold hands.
Cold hands.
Cold hands, Dave, and that goat.
Poor goat.
Cold hands and a goat. Yeah.
My doggie has been very bad. My son's in California on vacation, and we're babysitting his dog. And my dog is very jealous.
Really?
I am ashamed of my dog. We had a talk.
We had a talk?
Yeah. I always talk to my animals. Absolutely.
Well, I do too. I don't know if I'm going to in-depth talk about back. You don't need to be insecure, but, you know, I guess
the question is, do they talk back? That's what I want to know.
Sometimes he does.
Yeah,
collies are kind of vocal, man. They make all kinds of sounds.
Hoot hoot, hoot hoot.
Hooting is one.
Yeah.
Like complaining, whiny, growly noises are funny. They're very funny.
I had a dog, and he would. I'd ask him a question. He'd go woof, woof, and I just crack up. I was like, you're precious. Yeah.
Yep. They're trying to talk.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I love it. I like a vocal animal.
I do, too.
Unless it's a goat.
Yeah, goats.
Not so much on the cold hand goats, but yeah.
I'm not putting my hand under a goat. Sorry.
Yeah, I'd keep your hands to yourself.
not doing it. Not going there with a goat.
Do you guys have a memory of childhood and sometimes you could go, oh, the bells are ringing, so it's on the hour in your neighborhood?
No, not my neighborhood.
Yeah, I remember when I was first adopted, I lived in Warrensville Heights, and there were a lot of churches, you know, Catholic churches would ring the bells a lot. And others. And
it's
other
okay
denominations.
As long as
there,
yeah,
other
there,
denominations, too, you know, but I remember that.
Right. It's okay as long as their clock is right. Like, you're 5 minutes late, but the bells.
That's what the bell really means. Get your behind in the church.
I've been at my location here for 20 plus years. Yeah? Yeah, about 20 plus years. And moved in, and I didn't think about it at all. It was like, I'm not a participant, but it's there, you know. So, like, directly across the street and one lot over is the church, and it's a big size church. And when I moved in, I didn't really pay any attention to it. And then a Sunday rolled around. And they had a mechanical bell.
Did you say a
physical
bell or a mechanical bull?
Bull, yeah, they had a mechanical bull, and every Sunday,
those
Christians were flying everywhere. No,
that's a church I'm joining right there. That's
there you go.
I'm in that cult. Yes,
a mechanical bell. And so it's not the same as your bell, ding dong, you know, they pull the thing. Instead, it was mechanical, and it was broken. So it go bing, boom, bing, 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 bing. And I was like, just stop. It was horrible. And eventually they did. I haven't heard a peep out of that place in a while. But when I first moved in, it was like, bing, bong, bing, bing, bong, bing, 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 bing. It was like, wow. Fix your bell. bell story. True story. True bell story.
That rings a bell.
I don't have a true bell story.
No bell stories?
They usually use bells in school, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. They had bells in school.
Yeah, there you go.
When they worked. Yeah. When they worked. Yeah.
When they worked. Well, remember... The little rascal shorts, and they would show them in school. And what was on the desk of the teacher? She had a big old bell.
And an apple.
Did you ring that bell?
Ring that old bell.
Yes, Miss Crabtree would ring the bell.
Yeah. And as a kid, I liked the heck out of Miss Crabtree. I thought she was great.
Oh, I had a crush on Mr. Crabtree.
Me as well. Yeah, it was crazy. I remember there was one where they took the kids, Miss Crabtree took the kids to a carnival of some a daytime carnival or something. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Yep.
And I think she was chasing after them because they got lost or they were running away from her or something. I can't remember.
Some kind of mischief. Yep.
Yeah. That links directly into a Superman cartoon where it was like right after Little Rascals ended, the 1968 Superman cartoon came on. I was, oh, Lord. That's a memory link there. The two are tied together for me forever.
I'm trying to remember which 60. I think I know which one that is.
1966 to 68, there was the first Superman cartoons.
Yeah, I didn't watch them originally, but I think I saw like the rebroadcast on UHF TV.
Right.
Yeah, good old UHF.
I was traveling. I don't know why, but I was not in my city. I was in Washington, D.C., I think. And I was in a circumstance of being in a motel hotel room. And time to go. But we can't leave. Superman's on. You know, I was like, I'm not going to get out of here, kid. You got to go. I was like, but we don't get Superman where I'm at. We're getting Superman. It was like, hello.
Yeah. Get your priorities straight. I got to have Superman.
Yeah, that's right. That senators get all the good stuff.
Yep. No, I know. What the heck?
They get Superman whenever they want him. You know, it's not right.
Yeah. Oh, to me, that was a big deal. I was like, really, I don't know, dude, 6, 7 years old. That was important stuff.
I know Al Bundy was upset when they took off Psycho Dad. That was,
Psycho Dad? What's that?
It was a fictitious show that Al Bundy used to watch on Married with Children.
Psycho Dad?
Yeah.
It was about a dad that goes off on his family and chops them up and turns them into Brunswick stew and
kills his wife because she
served it to the neighbors. What?
Killed his wife because she weighed a ton. That was the theme song.
Wow. You can make a whole lot of soup out of that one.
Al was not politically correct at all.
Right. In a time where we didn't have to be.
No. The good old days.
Yeah.
Last week I did a thing. I did a repeat that we hadn't seen since 2015. And back in 2015, the end of the film, I'm sitting there and I'm going, man, that was one of the most horrible movies. And so I played Michael Venner's Incredible Bongo Band with their version of Apache. And I was sitting there going, like, all right, folks, we need to testify, that was the most horrible movie we ever seen. And, that might be seen in a different light than 2015 in these days and times.
Yes.
Although it was really funny, and even though it might not have been politically correct, the people that watched it thought that was hilarious, even after seeing it, you know, in 2022. We're going to testify how bad that was. Yeah.
Good stuff.
And I think evangelical preacher humor is hilarious. So why not?
Yep. Hey, worked in the Blues Brothers.
Yep. It did. Blues Brothers were so cool.
Very well.
The Blues Brothers were so cool and so non-politically correct.
Yes. Part of its charm.
But, you know.
Again, are we ever going to see the likes of Mel Brooks or Don Rickles or... guys like Sam Kinison and what's his name, Andrew Dice Clay, maybe they went too far.
Right.
But
yeah.
Yeah. Sam Kennison was a guilty pleasure of mine. I enjoyed the heck out of that guy, but I
oh my gosh.
Admit it and mix comments.
Do you know that he used to be a preacher?
Yes. Yeah, he started off. Yeah, it was great. just wow. And
he had a revelation.
You know,
revelation.
He had a big revelation. He did, and he was just if it's funny, it's funny. And I don't think that there should be too many parameters on that. As long as you're not, you know, inducing harm to anybody, which for the most part, I don't think comedy does. Funny's funny.
I've always, you know, because for one thing, stereotypes are funny. And as long as you're not doing it to purposely hurt someone.
Sure.
Say, so what?
Right.
That's what I
right.
say. Now, I'm wrong, apparently, but I... that's just my feeling about it. Because otherwise, what do you got with comedy? You make fun of yourself and you stand up and yell four-letter words, which I won't do.
Well, that's not comedy. That's cussing.
That's comedy.
Shock
yeah.
value.
So
that, and it, you know what? That shock value
right.
it wears itself out real fast.
Right. But see, the
it
stereotypes
no longer
can't
shocking,
exist.
Which is kind of bad.
The stereotypes can't exist unless they're true. Because
unless there's some,
in
there's some truth
it,
based in it, yeah, absolutely.
In order for it to hit home, people have to recognize and go, hey, I know that. And so there is a truth to that aspect. And if,
you know,
if
it's
you can
not
pick up
true,
on it,
but it seems that way, you know, or you know it's not true of everyone, but it just...
Or, right, it's an amalgamation of a certain thing
sure.
set, so to speak, you know, And it exists, and it is true. And again, if it wasn't true, nobody could identify it and go, that's funny.
Right.
You know.
And I'll tell you something, no matter what you do, something is going to offend someone. Whatever you say, I know I did.
Right.
For a while, I did some weekly columns in a local newspaper. The kind of slice of life thing. And one was I called it the convenience of the family. So I always thought that it was the most ridiculous term ever to be put in a death notice, that the, you know, service would be held at the convenience of the family. Well, there's no convenient time to hold a service. So what I did is in print, I made up this little conversation between a brother and a sister about when they were going to have the service for mom. And they were arguing about when the service was going to be. And I guess somebody really called up the newspaper and read them the riot act about that, you know? Other people thought it was funny, but that person was truly, truly offended by that.
Wow.
It's a really funny thing.
The thing is, too, here's another thing about comedy, and there are times, you know, if you can read a room, you can kill with great timing. But there are always elements that timing can completely destroy a joke. You know what I mean? A particular topic that's extremely sensitive to someone because something maybe dramatic happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I don't know.
Eddie Murphy did something years ago about a family gathering. And it was Aunt Bunny, 400-pound Aunt Bunny on the steps, and she goes, my shoe! She's falling down steps, and it's hilarious. And a lot of people go, I have an Aunt Bunny that, you know, is constantly falling down the steps. You know, stereotypical? Yes. Funny? Yes. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just hard. I feel sorry for comics. It's harder than ever, and you're not seeing very much good comedy on TV or anything anymore.
Right.
Not that I watch TV.
I find that in the 15 years, but I have a really good rapport with the viewers that tune in, and we have, and a lot of times just in conversation, they crack me up and vice versa. And it's a safe place for comedy, just sitting there and bouncing off the comments that are there.
Yeah. But then, you know, they are people who are used to you and know what they can and can't, because you do have people that go on there, start saying real nasty crap, and they get booted off right by your own people.
Oh right. Yeah. I'm pretty tight about, I stay within in limits, and I'm not going to go left, right, up, down. No, I don't. But I still find a lot of stuff that's really funny. Safe. They're not. It's not like all knock jokes, but you know, it's still. You can still have fun. You know, speaking with people in a safe parameter. It might not be comedy club funny, but sometimes it is.
Sometimes it's better than comedy club funny.
Yeah. Well, like, we have a blast here, and, you know, nobody got hurt.
Nope. Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
Not that I know. Well, there was the one guy.
There was the one guy, and yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, if I
ever ran across somebody who got butt hurt, well, that was it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, buddy.
No, you remember who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big, remember, I was the target. Asimov never said that. I'm reading right from Asimov. What are you talking about?
You're wrong. You're wrong.
You're wrong. I'm like, okay, I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. That's okay.
Sometimes it's fun to be wrong.
Sometimes it is. I know there's a comedy bit out there somewhere about. And now for our segment of things that are wrong, and you know, the guy just rolls off a whole bunch of stuff that's incorrect. Man. Yeah. Dave, you really caught me on this week's bell thing with that one
the very strange bed or whatever.
Yeah, the
terribly
very
strange
yeah,
bed.
I was like,
terribly strange bed.
Dale, I had to call him up and go, Dave, where's the bell? And we came down to it, and it was like, the tavern in passing. They mentioned it once. They mentioned her maternal instincts five times. They mentioned croupier six times. They mentioned LaBelle Tavern once. And I was like,
so. Still, it had a bell. But, it fits.
That's
it
right.
Did.
It
did.
Have a contest every now and then. Yep.
What was it? The Weird Circle does have a bell at the beginning and the end of the introduction. Toll the bell. Yeah, that whole thing. And then I was like, was that the bell? Yes. The tintinnabulation of the bells. Love that. Edgar Allan Poe. Oh.
Show where they paid no money for music, almost no money for sound effects, and use public domain storylines for scripts, except tonight's. This was definitely not a classic story.
Yeah.
But and they even had a cheap Peter Lorre in there.
Yeah.
They did. Yeah.
It's worse, That was worse than my Peter Lorre.
Mm-hmm.
And that's saying something.
They mentioned a four-poster bed in there, and they said that a four-poster bed wouldn't be in France. And it's like, well, the four-poster bed was more about they had to figure out a way so they could hang mosquito netting to keep the bugs off the sleepers. So I'm sure that there were some four-poster beds in France, unless they just
constantly didn't have any mosquitoes. They had to be imported.
Maybe. I don't know. I would think mosquitoes are kind of, what do you call that?
Universal?
Universal. Yeah, yeah. There you go. Yeah, yeah. I would think so. You know. And so, yeah, because that was one of the weird things. Why is there a four-poster bed here in France? And it's like, mosquitoes? I don't know.
Why else
that was
what
I understood. Yes. And, I mean, I grew up in the 60s, 70s, and sometimes you'd run across a four-poster that was really tall and mosquito netting. We didn't have central heat and AC back then. I remember it was hot in the summer and it was cold in the winter.
Yeah,
how did we grow up without air conditioning? Now I'm like a total wuss. I got
air. How did we grow up without cable TV or, you know, or the internet or a phone you can walk around with in your pocket? Because I enjoyed those days. I felt better.
Yep.
In some ways.
We got more exercise for sure.
We certainly weren't as connected, and there's something a little better. If they just couldn't get a hold of you, they just couldn't get a hold of you.
Yeah.
Right.
If it's important, you'll find me.
Exactly. Exactly. I think we're a little bit more disjoint than we were, even though we've got the communication devices. Like if you look at your neighborhoods are not anything like the neighborhoods that we had growing up. There's no community anymore, I don't think.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, the whole neighborhood was your babysitter. They'd tell
yeah.
your
yes.
parents if you
yeah.
did something wrong. Neighbors.
Oh, yeah, they knew about it before you got home. They knew before you
yeah.
got home.
Yep.
And your punishment hell was awaiting.
Well, the trick there was don't get caught by anybody doing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of the ghouls' favorite endings.
That's why I always wore my Richard Nixon mask. Yeah, that's why I always wore my Richard Nixon mask. Growing up, yeah. All kinds of reports of Richard Nixon doing stuff around my neighborhood.
Mm. Was he in politics when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I remember him in this. I remember I was in Florida when he got on the plane and said, see ya.
Yeah. I'm out.
Yeah.
Busted.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting on a plane. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I'm gonna pull my plug. I'm gonna go lay down again, and hopefully my head calms down. It was a lot of fun.
Well, hopefully, it
thanks
will,
so much for having
hopefully
me.
It will. Well, we're glad you could be had.
Yeah. That too. It was fun.
Okay.
Well, ew. There's only one thing to do then. It's bring in the one, the only James Durante. Turn on the three spotlights, because here he comes.
Good night. Here he comes.
Night. Good night.
Night.
It's time to say good night. What more is this say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible up we the same, and it could think could do. Good night. Good night.
Okay.
Oh, good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.